1290.
Every day, 5,000 cows go in one door and come out the other door on styrofoam trays. But don't worry, there are 40 meat inspectors working two shifts, which means they have to inspect 3.5 cows every 60 seconds. So, no blinking. Does anyone think this is a good idea?
Nobody says it better than Rick Mercer, one of the funniest guys, probably the funniest guy in the country, a national treasure, I think, Rick Mercer. We never miss his show on Tuesday night and Friday night. Yes, it is worth repeating. But also, he has one of the most biting commentaries there is out there. The XL meat horror story. We're all processing what happened there. And we're all looking at meat differently because of the XL situation and the massive recall that followed. I know every time I go to the meat counter now and I'm thinking, oh, wouldn't it be great to have a great steak this weekend? And then you think, I wonder if it came from the XL plant. And what is the XL plant called now? And have they actually cleaned it up? And could it happen again? More and more people are turning back to their local butcher. And that is a huge movement. I want to talk to a couple of the players involved in that. But I want to share with you, it's only a minute long, a little over a minute, Rick Mercer's entire rant on the XL plant. And it will remind you of what we've been through and what we're still going through when it comes to being reassured that the meat we buy is okay to eat.
The thing that freaks me out the most about this whole meat recall story is the sheer size of the story. How is it possible that one plant is responsible for one-third of the beef products in a country of 35 million people? I'll tell you how. XL Foods is not just a meat processing plant. They're practically their own country. I'm surprised they don't have a seat at the United Nations. Every day, 5,000 cows go in one door and come out the other door on styrofoam trays. But don't worry, there are 40 meat inspectors working two shifts, which means they have to inspect 3.5 cows every 60 seconds. So, no blinking. Does anyone think this is a good idea? I mean, I know the Minister of Agriculture, he thinks it's a good idea, but does anyone on this planet think that? And here's a question. Who the hell are XL Foods? If you go to their website, you will see that they're a company that is built on trust and a firm handshake. Past that, it's all a mystery. It's all pictures of cows grazing in meadows. It's like a website for a spa. And then way down in the corner, there's a button. Recall information. I thought it was the Like Us on Facebook button, but of course they're not on Facebook because they're like a secret society. It took weeks for people to figure out who owned the company. Combine that with a Minister of Agriculture who spends half his time in witness protection, we might as well all just crawl in a freezer and shut the door. This is not a meat recall. This is a wake-up call. The entire system is designed to keep us in the dark. And if we let it stay that way, we're cooked.
We are cooked. And I think more and more people are rethinking their whole food-buying habits. I had the opportunity recently to attend a most unusual event. We had a dinner, and a wonderful, wonderful dinner it was, at a table, one table, 120 people. Picture that, one table, 120 people. The table, I should explain, was in a greenhouse, a long, long greenhouse with a very lovely white tablecloth. It was fine dining in a greenhouse, one table, 60 people on each side. And one of the, I think there were about 10 courses, all smaller. So it wasn't like it was an evening of gluttony. But one of the presenters, the farmers, I should mention, were the presenters. These were all locally grown products. And the beef that was served was Ecuadorian beef. So I tracked down the farmer who was serving the Ecuadorian beef and said, what is Ecuadorian beef? You mean you ship the cattle in from Ecuador? Well, he had an interesting explanation. And he's on the line this morning. His name is Paul Spence. Good morning, Paul.
Hi, Andy.
We're going to introduce your friend Mary in just a moment. But, Paul, the dinner at in the greenhouse in Dresden, no question, one of the most unusual dinners I've ever been at. That was quite an evening you put on there in Dresden.
It was, to say the least, it was quite an evening. Being on the other side of the table and looking at it from the culinary perspective on what restaurants and the culinary world look at from a farming standpoint. It was interesting to gain those that perspective and what it's like to put food on the table for people.
What was the buzz after that dinner in the greenhouse, Paul? What were the comments you were hearing?
Most of it was shock and awe. A lot of people didn't know what to expect. A lot of people came with preconceived notions, because obviously farmers have a certain reputation amongst people in the world. But
you thought that they thought that you were going to wear straw hats and rubber boots and have a bandana around your neck and a banjo? I mean, what did they expect?
Maybe not that, but more just the fact of, like you said, there was the one long table, and it was actually set up so that it was to emulate fine dining and to be upper middle class. And most of the people were shocked that farmers thought like that, that could pull something off like that, or that had the capability to put something together like that. So it was...
Well, they came in, and this would be a blessing for you, with very low, in a sense, low expectations. What did they say afterward?
That was the thing. There wasn't anything to say. It was just the fact of leaving, I guess, with their mouth open, to say it bluntly, because of what they experienced, the quality of the food, the environment, the company, with having different people from different groups, different social economical groups. That everybody, from every response I've heard from that dinner, everybody was shocked and blown away with what a group of farmers, if they work at it, could pull off and put together.
Some of our listeners may be thinking, well, that's very nice down there in Dresden and Chatham. What's that got to do? Well, you and your wife grow beef, which is sold at the Western Fair Farmers Market right here in London. So I'm just helping our listeners explore options rather than going to the Sobeys and the Costcos and the big box stores for their meat. They can buy their meat locally and talk to the guy who actually raises it, namely Paul, you and so many of your colleagues. Paul, what is the thinking out there right now with respect to what happened at the XL plant, and what important criteria are now for people when they're shopping for their meat?
Well, it depends on, I guess, Andy, whose perspective you're thinking about. I think most of the people in the rural settings are aware of what's been happening, because it's kind of Ontario's dirty little secret that not so much butchers, but the local abattoir has been disappearing for years and years. And thankfully, in Chatham-Kent, we still have two left, and we work with one of them. But the idea that you can actually know where the cow goes in, that it's done in a humane way, that it's done in a manageable way, and as Rick Mercer ranted about, that how a person can inspect 3.5 cows in 60 seconds, that there still has to be a quality there that obviously wasn't up to the standard at XL, and now we're seeing ramifications of it.
Paul, I want to ask you about your special touch with Ecuadorian beef, but I want to bring in Mary Simpson, who's been waiting very patiently. Would you introduce Mary?
Mary is helping me. We're putting on a dinner next week, and she's helping. She works with the Art and Cookery Bank in West Lorne, and she herself is getting into the learning about the beef industry and the culinary world, and we're happy to work together and to provide an experience that people should come out and try.
Mary, how are you today?
Very good.
Let's talk about the Arts and Cookery Bank. I mean, Paul said it as if we should all know what it is. Let's start with each word, bank. Why the word bank?
Because the cookery and the art gallery are located at an old Bank of Montreal in West Lorne, down in West Elgin, that was built in 1916 and has been given a new, beautiful life, renovated, and it's just a fantastic destination for Londoners to explore local food.
Okay, let's look at the word cookery.
The mission of the bank is to advance awareness through education. We are inspiring visitors to expand their thinking and develop insights about the significance of our local food and farming. And we do that through culinary activities and photography. So that's the arts part.
Well, I was going to ask you, what's the arts part?
Photography. So we are photographing our community. We have galleries of our local pictures taken by local people of the past. We have a fantastic archive, digital archive on computer of thousands and thousands of pictures of our community's past, the vanished villages and the local activities and industry of the past. And then the present, we're taking pictures, and we're also the whole programming is looking to the future.
Wow, what a marriage. Arts, a cookery, and a bank. That is so people who come to visit the Arts and Cookery Bank, I'm sure they're all, first of all, just curious because none of them have ever been in something called an Arts and Cookery Bank.
It is absolutely unique. Yeah, we're not a museum, and we're not a cafe, and we're not a, you know, a tourism, you know, information center, although we do give out lots of orientation information to visitors, and we do attract a lot of tourists in. But no, it's a unique one-of-a-kind with its focus on our we're interpreting our local culture, rural culture, through food and photography.
Okay, so Paul, what does this have to do with you, the farmer?
Well, Mary approached me through a contact that I know in London because of dinners that we do on our farm, or in conjunction with our farm. We do them at an old one-room schoolhouse that was built in 1883, but my wife immigrated here from South America. And so the question you asked me at the dinner about Ecuadorian beef, we use beef raised locally and sustainably here from our farm, and then we partner it or match it with my wife's culture from South America. And there's a meal in South America that's famous called a parrilla or a parrillada that it's 100% meat meal. And so that's what we're going to do at the Cookery Bank next Wednesday night, is to demonstrate for people what a parrilla or what a South American meat meal would be like.
Is that the beef that we had the privilege to chow on in Dresden?
Yes.
Well, absolutely, folks. I can tell you that's worth the price of admission alone. I have more questions. I'll be back with Mary Simpson and Paul Spence to talk about this. Arts and Cookery Bank, it just west of London. And is this the wave of the future? We'll be back in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
Every day, 5,000 cows go in one door and come out the other door on styrofoam trays. But don't worry, there are 40 meat inspectors working two shifts, which means they have to inspect 3.5 cows every 60 seconds. So, no blinking. Does anyone think this is a good idea?
In conversation with Mary Simpson and Paul Spence, Paul Spence is a farmer in the Chatham area who sells his meat at the Western Fair Farmers Market right here in London. Lo Maximo Meats. That's quite a name, Paul.
Again, it's the respect and honor, the idea that our meat is, we're trying to teach people about South American cooking, South American food, and their mentality towards meat.
Well, cooking it is one thing, but how? Tell me the difference between a steak that we would buy at the Western Fair Farmers Market here in London and what you would buy from the XL meat plant.
With XL, I can't speak specifically to how they would do it, but the general idea is that local abattoirs, the standard that used to be was the beef was killed and then it was aged. It was dry aged for 21 days so that it was hung. And there's a process in the meat that breaks the meat down. And it actually is a natural process, but it actually is what you're referring to about the meat you had at the dinner at the greenhouse. And that's the difference between local abattoir mentality, if they still do the 21-day dry aging because it's becoming so costly to hold it for those many days. And then in XL, where you start to have processes like the tenderizing of meat with little knives or wet packaging, things like that is where the corners are being cut, but it's in the name of profit and in the name of logistics. So,
well, the CBC Marketplace, as I'm sure you're aware, did a piece last week on these mechanical meat tenderizers from the point of view of them making the meat more susceptible to E. coli. I want to bounce it back over to Mary. Mary, you're the director of the Arts and Cookery Bank there in West Lorne. With the dinner coming up next week, tell us what about the dinner.
Well, Paul is going to bring the beef, and he and his wife are going to cook and explain the South American sensibility towards meat. And because I think we're kind of losing our understanding and appreciation for meat. You know, we love eating it. In fact, you know, many would say we eat too much. The whole idea, I think, with the bank is that that food is as much about pleasure and communion as it is, you know, about, well, nutrition and health, but, you know, it's about coming together, learning about the food. We're going to help prepare it and then lovingly retire to the dining room, and it'll be all served to us, you know, five-star style. So we do this program. We have many food and culinary programs, but the this particular one is called Nine Wednesdays, and every Wednesday, a different chef from the London, St. Thomas, Chatham, and rural areas is lined up, and he or she plans a menu with a specific, you know, learning piece around it. Like one gal, one coming up is going to just focus on root vegetables. And if you go, if you just Google the Arts and Cookery Bank, you can find the calendar. We have a program called Reviving the Lost Arts, and there you learn how to bake pies and can. And
Mary, I want to jump in because I asked you last night if there's one point that you wanted people to remember from this interview. It was about what we are doing to our local butchers. And I just we haven't covered that point yet.
Yes.
What are we doing to our local butcher, and why are there so few of them left?
Well, too many factors, but the two big ones are that the regulations that have been developed over time are really targeted at controlling the big assembly line factories. And so when you try to apply the same regulations to a boutique abattoir where every animal is being handled separately, and it's just the economies of the scale have just gone out the window, all the paperwork, it's just been more and more and more, and they've just fallen out by the wayside.
In other words, we're just to put it bluntly, we're butchering the local butcher with regulations.
Yeah, well, it could be said. They would agree, I believe.
Paul, let me ask you to weigh in on this same issue. What's happening? I mean, I think Mary's message is get to know your local butcher, but we're making it so tough for them, Paul.
Right, and that's where I said it. It is kind of Ontario's dirty little secret that it is easier to have one centralized or a couple centralized places where all the killing happens and everything goes there. But as we see from what happened at XL, that there are ramifications with that. The old standard, which I have yet to hear of a local abattoir that's having tainted meat coming out of it. I may be wrong, but with the standard that Mary said, that they do individual animals, that they have a higher standard in quality and commitment because they don't have the volume.
Where do you have yours done?
Highgate Tender Meats. And they're from my understanding, locally, they're one of the few that left that do the 21-day dry aging, which is what you're raving about in that taste and that flavor of the meat that you had at the dinner.
I don't want anybody to think that just because it's done by a local butcher automatically it's perfect meat. Somebody just sent me an email. Paul says two words, Andy, Aylmer Meats, and we all remember that fiasco. So
yep.
Mary, let me ask you, I mean, just because you know your local butcher, does that guarantee anything?
Well, here's an example. You know, when we go to the local Glencoe Fair in September, we bid on we bought through the auction the 4-H kids. We did a pork and a sheep. Then we sent it to Ralph Boss over in Strathroy, and he dressed those animals for it. So we know the children who lovingly raised those animals, and we sat right there at Glencoe Fair and bid against you know, our neighbors on it, and now it's in our freezers. And so we know the life of that animal from the beginning to our dinner plates.
Mary, we have to leave it there. Mary Simpson is the director of the Arts and Cookery Bank. And just a few seconds, Mary, on your dinner coming up.
November 7th, 6:30, and you just Google the Arts and Cookery Bank and call in for tickets. And we would love to have anybody from London. That's just one of many events, but that's the one that I'm all excited about, and where Paul and Sarah, his beautiful wife, are going to be our culinary farming celebrity host.
And I've had it, folks. I had it at a dinner in Dresden, and I'm trying to think of the right word, Paul. I guess you would say it schmecks.
Sorry?
It schmecks.
It schmecks.
What's the adjective you would use to describe your beef?
Muy bueno.
There we go.
Muy bueno. That would be a good one.
All
Barry,
right.
Barry got that one. I didn't get it.
We thank you both for joining us. Folks, do us a favor. Hands on the wheel, eyes on the road. Please hang up and drive so you arrive alive. And we can chat again tomorrow morning at 9, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.